except someone playing her for a fool. That the someone in question was a smug man set on burgling away the good in her week only added to her fury. Acting on pure instinct, Kennedy grabbed the massive rolling pin off the counter. She might not be a trained ninja, but she'd seen Xena Warrior Princess enough times to know how to handle herself. Doing some creeping of her own, she walked right up behind Tank and stuck the handle of the rolling pin in his back. Hard. "Hands off my pies, big guy," she said, then realized he wasn't just big. He was massive and smelled really good, like fresh chopped wood, hot summer nights, and really bad decisions. She half expected Tank to spin around to do some kind of complicated roundhouse karate chop to the throat combination to disarm her, only he kept his hands on her pies and looked over his shoulder, his blue eyes twinkling with confidence as he took in her ponytail to her pink shoes and everything in between. With his dark, wavy hair, the perfect amount of scruff, and a smile that was all swagger and charm, the man didn't need brute strength. She cleared her throat. "I mean it. One wrong move and I shoot." "Don't shoot. I'm just trying to figure out what the right moves are, so you wouldn't be so offended by the idea of my hands on your pies." He said it with a grin that was all eye candy and sexy swagger. It was one of those "sorry, babe, couldn't help myself" movements that her mom's boyfriends used every time they got caught with someone else's lipstick on their collar. The same flash of white that Philip gave when he'd come home too tired to tango in the sheets. Only this man knew how to do it right. Knew how to do it so that a girl went weak in the knees. Not that her weak knees had anything to do with him. Or that grin. Nope. They were tingling because he had broken into her shop and touched her pies. Kennedy jabbed him harder with the rolling pin, distracted when it bounced off his muscles. "The right move would be to set my pies on the counter and put your hands in the air." "Or what?" He turned around, slowly, until her gun was pressing into his chest. His eyes dropped to take in her not-so-lethal rolling pin. And when they made their way back up, he didn't look scared at all. He looked amused. "You going to flower me, sweetness?" "No." She held up her phone, snapped his picture, and waited for his amusement to turn to fear. It didn't. "I'm going to call the cops and report a break-in in process," she said, channeling her inner NYPD blue. "And if you try to run, I will just show them your picture."
"No need,"
he said, stepping back, not to flee the scene, but to rest a hip against the counter. He casually set her pie boxes down, right beside him.
"The nearest cops are in Tacoma."
He threw up air quotes.
"A good couple hours away. Around here, we have a sheriff, and his name is Dudley. He carries a badge and a gun made of metal that shoots bullets, not flour."
"I know Dudley," she said, still holding the rolling pin out just in case he got any ideas while she looked for the sheriff's contact info. "He's a good customer. I even have his cell number."
"How about that?"
Tank said, but didn't sound impressed. He reached for the pie boxes again, and without thinking, Kennedy jumped forward and smacked his hand with the rolling pin.
"Ow!"
He jerked his hand back and shook out the sting. Kennedy had the sudden urge to apologize, but swallowed it quickly. She didn't ask him to break in and mess with her day. He did that all on his own. "Keep your hands where I can see them." She waved the pin for emphasis.
"Jesus, I was reaching for the sales slip," he said, snatching it off the box. "Suspicious much?"
"With men? Always."
"I don't know. Were you about to walk off with the last six pies and not pay?"
He thought about that for a moment and shrugged.
"Fee doesn't charge me."
"Do I look like Fee to you?" His lips twitched in a way that had her thighs doing some twitching of their own.
"Not that I can see, but a quick inspection of your pies will tell me all I need to know."
He stuck out his hand with the sales slip.
I'm Luke, by the way.
I'm not interested. And her pies were taking a permanent vacation from charming men with knee-melting powers. And I'm still calling the cops, so you can save those disarming dimples for someone who cares. She pointed the rolling pin in the general direction of his dimples.
Wow. Sexy and disarming, huh?
He said, as if he wasn't fully aware of their power.
Are you hitting on me, sweetness?
You're confusing hitting on with plain old hitting. He ran a hand over his jaw. The scruff told Kennedy that his 5 o'clock was a long time past.
Jenny Miller hit me with a pear in the third grade. The next day, she sent me a yes or no note.
He leaned in and lowered his voice, his breath teasing by her earlobe.
Was all that rolling pin action southern for flirting? Because up here, all you have to do is say, hey, Luke, I think you're sexy.
I'm not flirting with you. He cocked his head to the side and gave a smile that had her toes curling.
I think you are.
I think charm clashes with prison orange.
That might be so, but I bet it goes great with pie.
Warm zings dancing in her chest. Kennedy was too flustered to answer, so she scrolled through her phone to locate Dudley's number. With a grin of her own, she held up the cell so he could see the sheriff's name, put it on speaker, and hit call.
Be sure when Dudley answers, you tell him I say hi and that he still owes me a beer,
Luke said, crossing one arm over the other.
Then tell him you are interrupting Thursday night poker to report someone touching your pies. I'm sure he'll get right on that call.
I'm reporting someone stealing my pies, she corrected. And if you stop talking, I'll ask him to go easy on you.
Pecan, pecan,
Luke said in that tomato-tomato tone, and just the word made her fingers ache.
And if you admit you're hitting me was your way of flirting, I won't press assault charges.
Press charges? Kennedy said as the phone rang. You're the one who broke in, and you're built like a tank. How could I have possibly assaulted you?
You look like you went a few rounds on the ring. You're swinging a rolling pin with intent, and your apron says Nutbuster. Who do you think Dudley will side with?
That was when Kennedy noticed her burglar was dressed for the boardroom, not a ventilator shaft. His dark slacks, pressed blue button-up, and silk tie were way too GQ for a small-town pie shop B&E. Then she looked down at her split knuckles, the smudges of blood on the rolling pin, and saw his point. The phone stopped ringing and went to voicemail. With a frustrated sigh, she dropped her head and silently started counting to 10. She'd made it to 3 when black dress shoes came into her view. By 5, Luke was standing in front of her, his finger gently wrapped around hers, disconnecting the call, and sending one hell of a tingle up her arm.
How about you just admit you like me, and I promise to ask before touching your pies next time, so we can call it a day.
I like you almost as much as I like hulling pecans.
You just haven't spent enough time with me yet.
He looked at the cuts on her hands and let out a low, concerned whistle. When he spoke, his voice was soft, full of concern.
Look, I'm sorry about scaring you.
You didn't scare me.
That wasn't very neighborly of me, and I apologize. It's late, and you look tired. Why don't we pick this up another time? Over drinks.
She must have been exhausted, because the idea of a drink didn't seem so crazy. It had been a long week. She was looking at an even longer weekend, and it would be nice to celebrate her small success with someone.
Too bad. She still had 50 pounds of pecans to crack, 4 dozen apple pies to make, and justice to serve. Too many numbers to fit into a single night.
She considered her options. While seeing Luke hauled off in cuffs would make her night, it wasn't worth falling so far behind schedule. Not when she wasn't so certain he'd even be arrested. He hadn't actually stolen anything, and he might not look the part of a small-town hick, but the way he tossed around the sheriff's name told her he was the real small-town deal. Destiny Bay wasn't much bigger than a speck on the map, but it was big on family, apples, and justice, in that order, meaning that having the first sometimes determined follow-through on the last. Being a local good old boy was nearly as good as being related to the president in these parts. Knowing that she was going to regret this come tomorrow, she looked at his big, strong hands and said, "I'll make you a deal. If you help me shell that bag of pecans and promise to never come back, I won't press charges." When he went to open his mouth, she added, "And any funny business happens, and I call the cops." He closed it. Then with a raised brow, he said, "Define funny business." She lifted the rolling pin. "No funny business," he said with a chuckle. "Got it." "The tools are on the counter. The rolling pin is within reach. Do we have a deal?" He just stared at her a beat, as though she were crazy. "Luke?"
"Yeah, we have a deal. But if I shell this whole bag, I want a pie. Made special for me. Hand-delivered by the baker, which will be you.
You haul that entire bag tonight, I'll name a pie after you and even feed it to you myself."
"If I haul the entire bag tonight, they won't be fresh come this weekend," he said, as if he were a baking god.
And maybe he was. The man had a certain Adonis appeal about him.
"Proper nut care is important."
Kennedy did her best not to look amused, but then he smiled, and damn if she didn't give in.
"Fine. Half now. And half this weekend."
He rested his palms flat on the counter and leaned toward her. His hands were huge, big and strong and oh so capable. She forced her eyes back to his.
"I won't hold my breath."
With a laugh, he walked over to the bags, lifting one as though it weighed nothing. He carried it into the back room and, ignoring her orders to set it back down, poured the entire bag into an ancient-looking machine sitting in the back of the kitchen that Kennedy had been using to hang her aprons on.
"What are you doing?" she demanded. "Dreaming about what you'll be wearing when you feed me that pie?"
She went to say that wasn't part of the deal, but he pushed the big red button and the machine sprang to life. Noisy gears ground back and forth as pecans were sucked into the machine and crunched.
"What's that?" "Fee's Nut Buster," he said, leaning in to stick the sales slip to the front of her apron, his fingers purposefully grazing the T and B in Nut Buster. "By the way, I'm El Callahan, Fee's nephew." He pointed to the first name on the slip, "and I think she probably meant the letter L when she called in the order, not E-L-L-E. He tugged on her ponytail. "See you around, sweetness."
Maybe it was the boyish smile he added at the end, or the way he smelled the pies as he carried them out the door, but Kennedy did something she hadn't done in weeks.
She smiled back. Chapter 3. Pies in hand, Luke Callahan walked toward Main Street and let his gaze drift back to the shop. The sky was fading from pink to orange as the late summer sun dipped behind the Cascades, creating a silhouette of his hometown, but he could still see shop girl through the window. All that big city bluster and a good dose of mistrust shining through those baby blues. With his most neighborly grin, Luke lifted his pies in thanks. Shopgirl's answer was to lock the deadbolt, then disappear back into the shop. A smart move on her part. She might be as tempting as a sexy fall fling in that flirty yellow dress, strappy little heels, and all those tight curves packed into a pint-sized bombshell of a body. But she reminded him of autumn in the Cascades. Challenging, exciting, and unpredictable enough to ward off even the bravest of men. She had a toughness that was impressive, a vibrancy that was exciting, and a warm smile that drew him in. The only thing Luke liked more than a sexy fall fling was a challenge. He thrived under pressure. Had to. If picking up the pieces after his father's death hadn't taught him how, then bringing his family's orchard back from near bankruptcy had. It took concentration, hard work, and an intense focus that didn't leave room for complicated cuties. Not to mention, this particular complicated cutie happened to be his mom's new baker. A clear reason to keep his distance, since his mom had been trying to pair him up since he grew facial hair. It had only gotten worse after his father passed away, and Luke had officially become the leading force behind Callahan Orchards. A strangling sense of regret and obligation knotted in his stomach at the reminder that the greatest man he'd ever known was gone, and it was up to Luke to cement his dad's legacy, to make sure his family was taken care of, which was why he was ignoring the bright blue eyes and mouth-watering curves in the shop and heading toward the bar at the end of town. The penalty box was a from-the-tap or straight-up kind of place that was as famous for its handcrafted hard cider as it was for its co-owner, former NHL superstar Bradley Hawk, who had more than one Stanley Cup to his name. Hawk also happened to be Luke's best friend and business partner.
"Hope you're hungry,"
Luke called out over the crowd as he moved behind the bar to pour himself a cold one. The place was packed. Not surprising, since it was Throw One Back Thursday and the Seahawks were playing football on the big screen. But Luke hadn't come to throw one back or catch the game.
"Jesus, man, what took you so long?"
Hawk asked, coming over. He leaned over the bar and gave Luke a hard smack to the back.
"I just landed a few hours ago."
Hawk tucked at Luke's tie.
"What's up with the monkey suit? Looking to get lucky? 'Cause I haven't seen your pants that pressed since my wedding."
"Funny, since I was the only one that night to get lucky," Luke said with a grin. Hawk grimaced.
"Yeah, well, I rectified that bad decision, and luck is now shining down."
Hawk's eyes went the length of the room, focusing on a couple of puck bunnies on the far side.
"See that honey sitting over there? She wants to see my championship stick."
"You mean the blonde one wearing the wedding ring?" Hawk snorted in disgust. He might be the NHL's favorite bad boy and the town's favorite playboy, but like Luke, he didn't get messed up in marriages. His own or someone else's?
"Nope. The redhead wearing double D's like they're a weapon."
Hawk lowered his voice and grinned.
"Promised me a Russian if I let her touch the handle. I don't know what the hell a Russian is, but since she is a sweet drawl and is wearing cowgirl boots, I don't think she was talking about her heritage."
"Well, don't get your passport out yet. I said I was stopping by to drop off your pie, not cover the bar."
Hawk's mouth fell open.
"Are you serious, bro? A Russian? How many guys get a shot at a redhead pulling a Russian?"
Luke patted Hawk's shoulder in solitude.
"A guy who isn't working tonight."
Pouting like a girl, Hawk grabbed a towel and started wiping down the bar.
"What kind of wingman are you?"
"The kind who has to get the rest of these pies to the book nook before 7.
He set the pies on the counter.
"My aunt is hosting the Destiny Bay Book Club meeting this month."
Hawk rolled his eyes.
"Book club, my ass. There's more illegal gambling going on there than in this bar during the Stanley Cup."
"Even the sheriff is afraid to intervene, which tells you something."
When Hawk eventually nodded, Luke added,
"Plus, I wanted to drop these by for you to look at."
Luke pulled a packet of legal papers from his suit pocket and handed it to Hawk.
"Matt Rogers expects our answer by Monday."
Hawk's interest went from the honey at the end of the bar to the packet of papers, and he gave an impressed shake of the head, the weight of the moment not lost. With a single signature, they were both going to take their family's businesses to the next level.
"Matt Rogers wants to offer us an exclusive contract." Just saying the words brought a giddy smile to his face. "If we agree, 2 Bad Apples hard cider will be served in all of his locations." "No shit,"
Hawk said, and let out a chuckle. It was gravelly and deep and full of relief. Luke could relate. This kind of opportunity had been a long time coming. He only wished his dad were still around to see it happen. Matt Rogers was one of the top restaurateurs in the country. A few months ago, he approached Luke about making a high-end, handcrafted hard cider for his chain of upscale sports bars. Hawk was the sports legend. Luke had the apples, and Rogers had the capital to pay in advance. With his dad's secret cider recipe, it was a perfect fit.
Only he isn't just looking at Washington and Oregon, Luke said. He wants to do a complete West Coast rollout before the end of the year.
Hawk met Luke's eyes over the top of the contract.
The entire West Coast would mean supplying 30-plus bars, in addition to our existing customer base, which was the ultimate plan.
You mean our 5-year plan?
Hawk wasn't the kind of guy to show fear, mainly because he had skin as thick as steel, and after a lifetime of facing down the biggest bully in town, then, in the NHL, nothing much got to him. But he was as rattled at the proposition as he was excited. Luke could see the sweat beading on his forehead.
We don't have enough apples to fill that kind of order.
They both had a lot tied up in this deal. A lot of money, a lot of time, and a lot of dreams. They were running short on the first two, and Luke refused to give up on the last one. There were too many people counting on him to even consider passing on this opportunity.
We don't have 5 years,
Luke said with quiet intensity. If we tell him we need more time to build to that level of output, he is going to go with another company.
Problem there is, we need more time to grow to that level of output.
There was that. Even with his dad's winning recipe, it had taken two bad apples a long while to get to where they were. Now they needed to double their business by the end of the year. Would it be difficult? Sure. Impossible? Nah. Luke had done the impossible and survived. This would be nothing. I think I can convince him to roll out Washington and Oregon in November and save California for December. Luke pulled a spreadsheet from the packet, one he'd spent the past few days and plane ride home, working and reworking until it was right.
You made a spreadsheet?
Hawk said, not impressed.
It might not have all the color-coded girly shit you do, but it makes sense, and the numbers are right.
While Luke handled the production and partnership, his friend was the numbers guy. Hawk was shrewd, discerning, and so tight his shoes squeaked when he walked, a side effect of living with a father who blew rent and groceries at the track. Not that Luke was complaining. Hawk's penny-pinching ways had allowed them to turn a barnhouse hobby into a verifiable business.
Apple supply will be tight, but we have just enough produce hanging on the trees to fill the first order.
Luke pointed to the bottom column.
Then we use the money from that to buy more apples for the California rollout in December.
Hawk studied the numbers, and when he came to the same conclusion as Luke had, he gave a big sigh.
I see how this can work. I do.
Hawk looked up, and Luke could sense the big but that was coming. It was in his friend's eyes.
Then I don't see where these apples are that you plan on buying for the second shipment. Every hard cider company in the country is scrambling to find enough apples to keep up with the sudden upward demand.
Heirloom apple shortage was the biggest concern facing the cider industry. There just weren't enough cider apples to keep up with the new consumer trend. With 400% growth over the past 5 years, the few apples that weren't spoken for were selling for double their value, which made expanding expensive. Luke pulled out a stool and sat down.
I put in a call last week to Bayview Orchards. I knew that the father passed away over the summer, and it turns out his family is looking to sell the property before harvest ends.
Hawk let out a low whistle.
50 acres of Yarlington Mill and Kingston Black Apples would be a game changer for us.
It was also the key to fulfilling a promise Luke made to his dad right before he passed. Bayview Orchards wasn't just home to some of the most sought-after apples in the country. It had once belonged to Paula and Oren Callahan. His mom used to say that she could spend a lifetime sitting on the front porch swing, looking out at the bay and sipping cider with Luke's dad. Although the latter part was impossible, Luke was determined to grant her the first wish. The family doesn't want to deal with the harvest, which makes them motivated sellers. Luke rattled off the price the family was asking, and Hawk laughed in disbelief.
The bidding might start there, but once word gets out about that many heirloom apples coming on the market, a war will start and drive the price way up.
Luke rested his elbows on the bar top.
Good thing I have a first right of refusal. Go on. When we originally sold the property to Old Man Stark, I insisted that one be put in. He knew how hard it was for me to sell, how much this property meant to my family, and agreed to a 60-day period. After that, the Starks are free to put it on the market.
Luke knew enough about contract law from his time in corporate development to ensure that if there ever was a chance to get his mom's home back, and he would work the contract in their favor.
And you're okay with two bad apples owning the property?
Hawk asked, but Luke knew he was really asking if Luke wanted him to be a part of the deal. It was his dad's dream to make a high-end cider that could rival reserve wines. He'd perfected his recipe, too. Then cancer struck, and struck hard, robbing Orin of his dream, his family of their legacy, and Luke of his father. The loss in itself was almost unbearable. That Luke had been living in Seattle, pursuing a career and life as far away from the farm as he could be, and not there for his dad when he needed him most, still burned. The memory alone brought that deep, dull ache of regret back, as fresh as if the funeral had been yesterday. He remembered the call, how frantic his mom had sounded, but by the time Luke made it home, his dad was gone, and the family business nearly bankrupt. Luke made a vow that night never to let his family down again.
That's how my dad would have wanted it,
Luke said to the man who had been more like a brother to him than a friend.
You are as much a part of the Callahan family as anyone.
Emotion thick in the air, Hawk gave a tight nod and took a moment to study the numbers a second time. Even though he took another pass, Luke knew his friend was in. Knew the moment Hawk saw the same promise Luke did, saw what this deal could mean for their company, and what this land could mean for his family. Hawk cleared his throat.
So, you think Rogers will go for a later release in the California market?
I know he will. Luke smiled. He knew it was smug, but he didn't care. His trip had been enormously successful, and it felt good to see how the end would play out.
I told him it would be a reserve label hard cider, specially crafted from some of the most sought-after apples. Nothing but the best for his premier locations in San Francisco, Beverly Hills, Hollywood, and Tahoe. It was what he needed to hear. You're a cocky bastard, you know that? When you have the skills to back it up, it's called confidence. And with the money that we get from the first rollout, we can buy Bayview.
Hawk filled up two frosted mugs and handed one to Luke.
To that one stupid decision that changes everything.
It was the same thing Hawk had said that fateful day after school, when they'd broken into Old Man Whitaker's garage to steal his vintage Playboy collection. They managed to find a copy that was post-1969, when Old Man Whitaker surprised them. Whitaker had been looking for his December 1953 issue. Luke wound up grounded for the rest of the semester, and Hawk showed up for school the next day with a black eye. But their friendship had been cemented. Luke lifted his mug.
No regrets, just forward movement.
They both took a hearty drink. Hawk laughed and shook his head.
Oh, man, I wish I could have seen the look on your mom's face when you told her she was getting Bayview back. I guess that's why she and Fee sold the shop.
Confusion hit hard, followed by an uncomfortable twisting in his gut that left Luke slightly off balance.
My mom's on a cruise, and I've only been gone a few weeks. When the hell did they have time to sell the shop? The new owner moved to town a few days after you left,
Hawk said, his smile missing as well.
They sold it to some big city cutie with a sweet little smile. I thought you knew.
Oh, Luke knew exactly the cutie in question. Understood now why she'd been so skeptical. What he didn't understand was why his aunt had sold sweetie pies to an outsider without consulting him first.
Jesus,
he said, the knot in his gut tightening to the point of suffocation. He didn't have a clue as to the nature of the contract, which, if created by Fee, was probably written on a pie tin in lipstick. What if she granted the new owner the accompanying 3 acres of apples to go with it? 3 acres that could cost him his mom's land. Chapter 4. Saturday morning, Kennedy flipped the sign to open and walked behind the counter. The sun had yet to show itself, but a soft yellow glow touched the rooftops of Main Street, illuminating the historic clock tower that sat in the middle of the town square and reflecting off the light dusting of frost that had settled throughout the night. She had already been awake for over 4 hours, baking for the past 3, yet she was vibrating with energy. Today marked the official first day of the apple harvest in Washington. Come lunchtime, the downtown area would be buzzing with tourists and locals alike, all seeking out the best apple products in town. Kennedy was certain her pies would top people's must-buy list. She'd even baked double the quantity, throwing in a delicious pecan pie recipe she had picked up when her grandmother had taken her to Magnolia Falls for the Miss Pecan Parade. With crust under her nails, flour on her apron, and enough cinnamon and nutmeg to pass for a Thanksgiving dessert buffet, she was ready for harvest to begin. Her shop looked amazing and smelled even better, thanks to Paula and Lauren, who had braved the early morning to help her prepare. Placing an old-fashioned lace-top apple pie on the antique platter in the window, Kennedy added a vase with apple blossom branches to the side. She was arranging a small basket of Sweetie Pie's famous apple turnovers to complete her display when the front door jangled, then opened.
I'll be right with you, she said brightly.
No rush. I'm just admiring the display.
A husky and amused voice said from behind. A warm sensation spread through her body, and Kennedy convinced herself it was irritation and not attraction she was feeling. Because being attracted to a man who used charm as a weapon, even if his smile had enough punch to make her nipples sigh, was just irresponsible. And Kennedy hated irresponsible. According to her results, she needed someone who was loyal, understanding, intellectual, and excelled at verbal communication. A nice guy. Not someone who stole pies, spoke in brobonics, and relied on his charm to get ahead. Adopting her most professional look, Kennedy turned around, and sweet baby Jesus, punch wasn't the right word. The man was packing enough alpha swagger and testosterone to obliterate all the oxygen in the room. Even worse, Luke was hot. She hadn't seen it the other day because she'd been thrown off by his smart-ass smile and starched entitlement. But towering there in the doorway, looking cocky and mouth-wateringly irritating in a ball cap pulled low and a pair of aviator glasses, she couldn't deny it. Gone were the suit and tie. Today, Mr. GQ had put on his rugged rancher uniform of worn work boots, faded jeans, and a soft cotton tee that stretched across his chest, highlighting muscles that Kennedy didn't even know existed. His biceps flexed.
Good morning, sweetness.
The way he said sweetness had something entirely inappropriate pulsing below her belly button. And as if she didn't already have enough to deal with, it wasn't purely irritation.
I didn't expect you to show.
She looked at the time on her phone. Especially this early. His grin was slow coming, but mesmerizing.
If you didn't expect me to show, it means you were thinking about me.
She ignored this. Well, you could have slept in. I already hauled the nuts. Luke didn't look impressed. In fact, he looked confused by the idea of not being needed. To prove her statement, Kennedy pointed to the pecan pies in the window and smiled. It had taken her more than a simple Captain America maneuver of the other bag to get the nuts into the machine, but she had managed. He paused for a long moment. Then that grin grew.
Since you're so capable, maybe you can help me with mine.
His eyes fell to her nutbuster apron and lit with amusement.
I prefer a soft touch, though.
He said it as though she were actually interested in his preferences, which she wasn't, not one bit. Kennedy had a business to run, a life to fix, things to accomplish, and nowhere in that list did it include knowing a man's preferences or caring. So with a deliberate eye roll, she wisely went back to her display.
Okay, seriously. I promised you I'd hold the whole bag, he said. And I always come through on my promises.
Yes, well, you're a man, which means everything you say is up for interpretation.
Then you've been spending time with the wrong kind of men, he said quietly. Damn, that was a good answer.
Sweet and completely endearing. A trait she hadn't noticed when he was stealing her pies. Maybe she'd missed more. Something deeper. Because what kind of man showed up at 8 a.m. on his day off to help someone haul nuts?
Not any kind of man Kennedy had ever met.
Then again, Kennedy wasn't looking to meet a man. She was looking to build herself a future. Find her happy place. Thank you, but your help is not needed. With a parting smile, Kennedy headed toward the counter, giving him a clear sign that this conversation was over. In typical male fashion, he did the exact opposite of what she wanted. He followed her. Have a nice day and come again, she deadpanned. Unsure what to do when he didn't head toward the door and instead came even closer, Kennedy picked up the stack of autumn-themed pie boxes she'd ordered last week and started assembling them.
You have to serve me before you can tell me to come again, he said, lowly.
A ripple of heat pricked her skin. Blaming it on the turn of the 20th century wood oven in the back, Kennedy looked up and smiled her most professional smile. What can I get you, sir?
There are so many options,
Luke said, taking his time to catalog each and every option.
Too bad he wasn't looking at the display case.
He was looking right at her, his gaze laser-focused. So intense and full of male appreciation, she began to squirm. And heat.
But today, I'd settle on sharing a piece of pie. With you.
Kennedy swallowed hard, partly because she was flustered. No man had ever looked at her like he wanted to savor her slowly. But mostly she swallowed because there was something about this man it made her wonder what it would feel like to be savored slowly by him. And by pie, you mean sex?
Oh, sweetness. Is that big city for you want to have a sleepover? With me?
Luke flashed her one of those grins that were full of promise and short on accountability. The kind that charmed women out of their panties and into bad decisions. The kind that guaranteed an epically amazing night and an even more epically lonely morning. It was the kind of grin to which smart women were immune. And enduring or not, Kennedy was always smart. Sure, she'd had a lapse in judgment with Philip and was a glutton for heartache when it came to her mom, but she was past that now. She was moving into the icing phase of her life. And nowhere in that recipe was there room for someone like Luke. You are so predictable. She picked up a bag. Now, point to the item in the case that you want. I will put it in this bag here, then you can go back to your day, and I can go back to mine.
Can't do that. Not until we have a little chat.
Luke pulled out a chair and sat down, sprawling his legs out and making himself right at home.
Recently, your days and mine have somehow become intertwined.
He kicked out the chair across from him. When she stared warily at the chair, like if she were to take a seat, it would be agreeing to desert sex, he added,
strictly professional. I promise.
He held up the scout's honor sign, and Kennedy regretted snorting earlier, as doing it again now would only be repeating herself. She looked at the time and, with a resigned sigh, grabbed one of her caramel apple breakfast cakes, two forks, and took a seat. You have 10 minutes until my next batch of pies are ready. She handed him a fork, which he took with a victorious grin. After savoring his first bite, that grin of his turned to pleasant surprise and, finally, blissful pleasure. Kennedy knew her cake was going to be a hit. It was too good not to. But it still gave her a small burst of pleasure to see someone taking joy from one of her creations.
Oh my God, this is incredible. It tastes like...
He trailed off, unsure of how to finish the sentence. Luke took another bite, savoring it.
Halloween.
He took another bite.
Yeah, a Halloween party.
It's my caramel apple breakfast cake, Kennedy said, remembering the first time she'd tasted it. My grandma took me to a Halloween fair in town, and we saw all these kids walking around with giant caramel apples. The woman selling them was a friend of Graham's and offered me one for free, but I had just gotten braces. Luke grimaced.
I tried taffy and braces once. Not good. Managed to rip out every bracket in one chew. Ended up picking apples for 3 months solid just to pay my parents back. I imagine caramel would have the same outcome.
That's what I told the lady. Kennedy had been devastated, not because she couldn't eat the apple, but because her mother had been a no-show that Halloween, leaving Kennedy nothing more than a giant green pea without a farmer. Momentary sadness swept over her, but she shook it off, reminding herself that it was in the past, and her present and future were up to her. The next morning when I woke up, Graham was in the kitchen and a warm caramel apple breakfast cake was cooling on the counter. Kennedy smiled at the memory, at how, once again, her grandma had made something sweet out of a bitter moment. She wanted me to have the same experience as everyone else. Wanted her to know she was loved and didn't have to miss out on the sweet moments of life just because she'd been dealt a sad hand. Kennedy looked up and found Luke staring at her with warmth, and maybe something as horrifying as concern. That's when she realized that her eyes were a bit misty. Startled, and a little embarrassed that she'd shared so much of herself with a practical stranger who made a habit of breaking into ladies' shops, Kennedy reached for her fork. At the same time, Luke reached for his. Their fingers brushed, and a zap of awareness danced up her arms, and Kennedy finally knew where that happy place had been hiding all these years. Stupid happy place. What did you want to talk about?
Well, there's the obvious,
he said, looking at her hands, which she had crossed over her chest in a defensive stance. Strictly business, remember?
If you say so.
When she said nothing, Luke sat forward.
Then let's move on to my apples.
Kennedy didn't know if she was more shocked or disappointed. Of all the possible reasons she could have imagined he had for stopping by, pitching her on his apples was not one of them. She may have been caught off guard at their first meeting, a situation she wanted to avoid happening again, so she'd taken it upon herself to do her homework. Not that she'd had to dig deep. It seemed news of Luke's homecoming was the talk of the town. According to proud Auntie Fee, Luke ran one of the largest apple orchards in the state and was co-owner of a hard cider company. According to everyone else, Luke was successful, secure, sexy, and the best catch in 9 counties.
I have more apples than I know what to do with.
And she could barely afford those. That seemed to please Luke, since his shoulders relaxed a little and that grin grew.
Well, that's great news, since I want to buy back your apples.
This is pleasantly unexpected, she said, sitting back in the chair. When Fee agreed to sell me the acres of apples at cost, I had no idea how I was going to use them all. I mean, that's like
48,000 pounds of apples.
Wow, I knew it was a lot, but 48,000 pounds?
Approximately.
Wow, she said again, wondering how many pies she'd have to make to use up all those apples. So it got me thinking, what happens to the remainder of the apples that are left over at the end of the harvest? Do I pay for them, or is it a wash? The contract didn't stipulate, and I didn't think to ask about it at the time.
She'd been too swept away by the thought of owning her own bakery, a good 2,500 miles from Philip and all the disappointments of her past.
Well, wonder no more, Luke said, as if he were the genie and all she had to do was rub his bottle. I am willing to offer you 10% over your cost.
Really? That was beyond generous. And a lifesaver. She didn't want Luke to know, but she had been running the first week's numbers, and something wasn't adding up. Her revenue rivaled fees, but her profit wasn't anywhere near what she'd expected. In fact, Kennedy was doing little more than breaking even on anything Apple-related, which was 99% of her merchandise. She needed to offload some of her apples or add some non-Apple items to her menu. Maybe she needed to do both.
I can work with that.
After I prep and freeze the apples I'll need to carry me through until next season, the rest are yours. The corners of his mouth twitched, as if her statement amused him.
I was talking about buying all of your apples.
All of them?
All 3 acres.
Kennedy choked on a laugh because surely he must be joking. She was the owner of Sweetie Pies, a bakery specializing in apple delectables. She needed apples in order to make pies, and not just any apples. The famous Sweetie Pies recipe called for specific apples, Callahan apples.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Without even blinking, he said,
I'll pay you double your cost. That's doubling your investment in just 2 weeks of being in business.
A familiar prickle of irritation pulsed behind her right eye. I have a degree in finance. I can do the math.
Then you know this is a great deal for you.
He was offering her a ton of money, but something about the way he was posturing himself had warning bells blaring. He'd purposefully worded his offer so that she could either accept or look stupid. It's not a great deal for someone who owns a bakery with a big neon apple hanging over the door.
Listen, sweetness,
he drawled, but this time it came off as bad as calling her little lady.
I will give you enough money to buy an entire orchard of apples. Then you'd never have to pay for apples again.
I don't need an orchard. I just need those apples, the ones I already have. Because you and I both know that the secret ingredient is Callahan apples, and not those delicious reds that you grow. The special ones, she said, making sure he knew that she knew her business. Mixed in with the typical baking apples every baker in America uses, the special ones add a tartness that can't be duplicated, and there aren't many orchards growing this kind of heirloom apple. Luke's smile faded, right along with that easygoing charm he normally wielded. In fact, it was the first time Kennedy had seen him look frustrated. His brows puckered and his face kind of folded in on itself, as if he were pouting.
It's because they're cider apples, he said sharply,
and Kennedy could hear the soul-deep frustration in his voice, but it was the desperation she saw in his eyes that got to her. He needed those apples for some dream, just like she did.
No one but my aunt would be crazy enough to mix cider apples in with Granny Smith's or Honey Crisps, but 1 year, the frost killed our entire Granny Smith crop, and she went rogue.
Well, it's brilliant, Kennedy leveled with Luke. And I can't keep Sweetie Pies open without them. So I'm sorry if you were counting on them for your cider, but I use them in some way in nearly everything that's on my fall and winter menu. They were too bitter and tart to be the main ingredient, but used correctly, they gave a depth to all of her recipes that she'd never been able to reach before. Luke sighed, long and tired, and she almost felt bad for him.
Almost.
Then he said,
I'll buy you out of the shop. What you paid plus 20%. You walk with a nice nest egg and away from all of the risk attached to owning a small business. It's a win-win.
For who? Certainly not for her. That kind of money could be a life changer, but she liked the life she was creating. A lot. Do you think it's as easy as throwing some money my way and I'll just happily up and relocate?
Luke looked at her as if that was exactly what he thought. And something about that rubbed her the wrong way. The way he casually offered to buy her out of her future, putting a price tag on her dreams, had frustration coursing through her body. Philip had done the same thing.
Buying her out of their condo, as if with the exchange of a few bills, they were good, and he was forgiven, and she would be just fine. And why not? It had worked for her mother and her father.
What is it with people?
She mumbled, realizing the old Kennedy would have packed up without complaint, taken the hollow gesture and moved on. Well, not the new Kennedy. If she was going to pack it in, start over again, it would be on her own terms, not because someone was paying her to go away. She was ready for some of life's icing, and Sweetie Pies was her best chance to make something for herself. I guess I like the risk, because this woman isn't for sale, and neither is her shop. Kennedy stood, but Luke remained in his seat. She watched him school his features, any hint of softness gone.
Look, I didn't want it to go down this way, but there's no way that contract will stand up in court.
He forked off a piece of tart and savored it as if he didn't have a care in the world.
What does that even mean? I'm trying to be a good guy here.
Luke pulled out a corporate check from Callahan Orchards made out to her, Kennedy Sinclair, with a blank line in the amount section.
Take the money.
And what? Leave town? Find a new place to start over? He shrugged.
If that's what you want.
After a lifetime of rejection, Kennedy was good at masking her emotions. A master at ignoring the sting that came with being tossed aside like yesterday's garbage. Any ounce of compassion he'd earned evaporated. Quick. Kennedy couldn't believe she'd been so easily hoodwinked. A crooked smile, a touching moment over her grandma, and just like that, she'd forgotten that she was done being charmed. Done with men. You didn't come here to help with the nuts. You came here to take my apples.
I promise to help, and like I said, I always keep my word.
He sounded sincere and genuine all at the same time, and Kennedy felt some of that anger turn to confusion.
And I promise that this is the best offer you're going to get, so I suggest you take it. Everyone knows my aunt wasn't in her right mind when she sold the shop.
The hell I wasn't!
The door opened, and there, with her flapping apron, rolling pin, and a tray full of cooled pies, stood one of Kennedy's helpers, and the crazy aunt in question. Today, her hair was in silver spikes, her lips coral and puckered in outrage, and her attitude was as warm and fuzzy as a hornet.
Not right in the head, she mumbled, setting the trays down. Been running this town for nearly a century, and no one's ever dared to question my sanity.
Kennedy had a sneaking suspicion that their silence on the matter had more to do with fear of retaliation than opinion, but she wisely kept silent.
Aunt Fee.
Luke stood and took off his ball cap, as if he were 12 and caught tracking mud through the house.
What are you doing here?
Helping out our new friend, Fee chided. Didn't think she could run this on her own right out the gates now, did you?
I didn't think she'd be running it at all, especially since you and Mom have turned down every offer I brought your way over the years.
Unless you're dealing with apples, your pickers always led you astray.
Luke ran a hand through his hair, leaving it in complete disarray, but there was a teasing, a lightness to his voice when he spoke.
Just make sure you explain that to Mom when she comes home from her cruise and discovers that you sold her shop.
Mom's home,
Paula Callahan said, trailing out of the kitchen with a display tray of cookies in one hand and her cane in the other.
and she knows all about the sale.
What are you doing?
Luke said, his anger about the sale replaced with concern. He easily plucked the tray from his mom's clutches, as if it didn't have 6 5-pound humdingers on it.
Holding the tray like that is bad for your hands.
Well, I can't carry it on my head.
You shouldn't be carrying it at all.
Luke set the tray on the counter and took his mom's frail hands in his larger ones. Gently, as if she were the most precious thing on the planet, he massaged her wrists.
That's why you hired Lauren.
Lauren's in class, Paula said, waving him off as if she didn't love the doting. And this morning I woke up and thought, I need some time in the kitchen. So I called Kennedy, who was nice enough to put up with 2 old coots and keep us on part-time. A decision that in hindsight wasn't so bad, since Lauren was a student at the local university and could only work early mornings before class and help with the occasional prep in the evenings. Now, before you go saying things you'll regret or misquoting facts, come give your mom a hug and tell her about your trip. Paula held out her arms, and Kennedy found herself wanting to walk into them. An unfamiliar urge that shocked Kennedy to the core, since she'd stopped needing hugs a long time ago. She remembered the first time she'd come home from school to find their apartment completely empty. She'd been 7, and her mom's boyfriend decided he wanted to move to Florida with everything but Kennedy. Kennedy sat on the porch all night, smelling like peanut butter cookies and gardening soil, waiting for her mom to come home and sweep her up in her arms like other moms did with their kids, and tell her everything would be okay, that she wasn't losing her home and her school and her friends. Promise her that Daryl was wrong and Kennedy wouldn't be left behind. But when her mom pulled up after collecting her last paycheck, there were no hugs, no words of comfort. Just a story about wanting to see the ocean and how it was a trip for 2. It was a year before she'd see her mom again. A year of wishing for her love and that hug she'd dreamed about, but never received. Even after that year came to an end, and Daryl turned out to be Mr. Wrong, there were no hugs. So Kennedy worked hard to keep herself guarded, to keep an emotional distance from anything that could leave her vulnerable. But there was something so comforting about Paula. A warmth and security radiated from her that drew Kennedy in.
Only if you promise to stop carrying things that heavy.
Luke gave a final rub to the middle of Paula's palm, then clutched both of her hands.
It was good. Better than good.
I never had any doubt, which is why I made your favorite cookies. Luke smiled, boyish and a bit embarrassed. It was the first honest smile Kennedy had ever seen from him. It took him from handsome to lethal. Luke's concern softened, and he leaned down and gave Paula a kiss on the cheek, pulling her in for a hug. Kennedy felt a strange tug of longing, watching the obvious flow of affection between the two. The way that Paula pulled Luke in, as though he were still her precious baby, and how Luke wrapped his body protectively around hers. It was so intimate, so warm. Kennedy felt as if she were intruding on a private family moment. She'd witnessed them before, but never having experienced one herself, she was always unsure of what to do. Stay? Leave? Insert herself into the moment? The first sounded awkward, the last humiliating. So, as ridiculous as it seemed, Kennedy was leaning toward leaving. Her own shop. On the busiest day of the year. Thankfully, a buzzer went off in the kitchen, paving the way to a graceful exit. I'll get that. It's my pecan pies, Kennedy said, her feet already in motion.
Pecan?
Fee said. Her words puckered like she'd just sucked on a lemon.
Who sells pecans at the Apple Festival?
I was just changing things up a little, Kennedy said over her shoulder, adding a few new items to spice up the menu.
The menu is spicy enough,
Fee snapped, clearly offended.
And this here is apple country, not pecan country. People around here know that.
Fee,
Paula chided in a sweet voice. We use pecans all the time. As decoration or for texture, not as the star. The apples are always the star.
You always know how to balance texture and heart, Paula said, gently taking Fee's hands.
It's what makes your pies so special. Everyone knows that.
Kennedy watched as Fee's stance softened. Her defensiveness disappeared, and she became warm, even a bit shy at the compliment. Paula took the time to validate Fee's concerns and offer her comfort without caving. It was impressive, and Kennedy wondered how it felt to have a support system like that. Someone who knew your deepest fears, your biggest weaknesses, and loved you through it all. Her heart a little raw, Kennedy turned to face the older woman.
I'm not taking away any items, Fee, just adding a few.
You can do what you feel is right, Paula said with a motherly smile that Kennedy was helpless to return. Then to Luke.
She's a smart one. Very creative. Pretty, too.
Luke didn't comment one way or the other, just sent Kennedy an unamused glance. Off balance by the whole family reunion and feeling unsure of where she fit into the mix, Kennedy said,
I have pies needing me in the kitchen. You guys have fun catching up.
It was well after closing when Kennedy dropped a ball of